So I wanted our model to be different, to look at and say, hey, they can have be talented in this art form and still make a really good living for their family. And so from the very beginning of when we started, that was my promise and kind of my challenge to ourselves as a whole is how can we create consistent work so that people can raise from just meeting basic needs, but you know, rise in their self-efficacy levels to self-actualization and actually be able to plan right for the future and for their families. So we not only take the average, obviously the average pay of what demographic we're in, but we 2 to 3 times that. And we make sure that they're getting compensated for extra trainings they do or experiences they have with tourists. And we did take a pinch on our margins are less so that we could still, again, keep our pay high, but then also make it more affordable and more attainable for customers to have more conscious consumerism.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business implies sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we have with us Jenny Nuccio, founder and CEO of Imani Collective, a global social enterprise empowering artisans. She joins us from Mombasa, Kenya. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Africa, with its rich culture and crafts, is able to share with the world products that are unique and enrich our lives. These crafts change within countries by region. So how are these crafts passed along generation to generation?
I think it all starts with education and all starts with making sure there's the proper lines of communication and training. And one of, you know, when Imani Collective started, we started with simply a sewing training program within the nonprofit sector, focused within just a small area with marginalized women. And as we grew, we really wanted to cultivate more than just a training, but also, you know, empower and have consistent artisan wages and jobs. And so I looked across the entire sector. I got with my team and was like, you know, there's so many beautiful art forms. We don't just serve in Mombasa. We also have a branch in Turkana, Northern Kenya, where we also do basket reed weaving and things like that. But one initiative we did, this is a perfect example, in 2016 was we brought on weaving, and we brought on weaving with specifically to wool. And my whole just heartbeat behind that was to revitalize the art of weaving. Because when I would go into these weaving cooperatives, and there were only a few in Kenya, they were all older generation, 50, 60, 70 year old women doing weaving. And I said, well, what's next? Like, what's going to happen next if we don't start training the next generation? And so that was a big initiative that we did in 2016. And we brought on foot looms and set looms. And we started to learn the supply chain from the shearer all the way to how we were spinning, to how we were utilizing dyes, to how we were getting that on the loom, to how our customer interacted with the rug or the blanket, with whatever it was. But the reality of where it starts is the heartbeat for education. And so Imani Collective has always wanted to be an educator brand, both for our consumer, but also internally for our team. And so it's been beautiful to see over the years. Most of our weavers are in their 20s and are vibrant and excited. It's just exciting to see that it truly was revitalized and it will continue to live that art from generation to generation.
Are the new generation making the same money as, say, working in a factory or a store or a call center? Are they able to make enough money doing these crafts? And
in our model, yes. I would say artisan work is really hard because most models in cooperatives or just how even design work is made, it's paid per piece. And so from the very beginning of when we started, that was my promise and kind of my challenge to ourselves as a whole is how can we create consistent work so that people can raise from just meeting basic needs, but you know, rise in their self-efficacy levels to self-actualization and actually be able to plan right for the future and for their families. And the reality is that is we need consistency and we need something that we know that we can depend on that's coming in versus maybe 1 month we have one sale, another 20, another we have zero. And this is just not to Kenya, but across the globe, we know that as that to be true for artisans specifically, is that it's very inconsistent. So I wanted our model to be different, to look at and say, hey, they can have be beautiful and have be talented in this art form and still make a really good living for their family. And so we not only take the average, obviously the average pay of what demographic we're in, but we 2 to 3 times that, and we make sure that they're getting compensated for extra trainings they do or experiences they have with tourists and all the other things that we can empower our people with. So that's the difference between our model versus others. And there's always a conversation, is it sustainable or not? In the front end, it's that was the main reason why we were a hybrid when we first began this model, because we knew that our sales had to catch up to our vision. And as we grew into what we are today, we're really proud to see the sales revenue and all that we've created in global market to be able to provide for our current collective on a monthly consistent basis.
You run it as a business, right?
Correct.
So you have the cost and you have a selling price. So now you increase the cost substantially compared to your competitors. So how are you able to sell it at the price, or have your prices increased, or you've just reduced your profit?
We've reduced our profit mainly. And it depends on the brand. So Imani Collective is a holding company now of multiple brands. One of our leading brands is called Imani Kids. It's a kids brand. It's modern. You actually wouldn't probably be able to tell it's made in Kenya. It's an interactive play, affirmation banner type of brand. That's pretty affordable. You can be a conscious consumer and buy from us. We are going to be more expensive than something you're going to find on the shelves of a major retailer, but we're going to be less than something that you would put in the box, right, of ethical or artisan or handmade, because that sometimes can be astronomical, hard to touch. We did take a pinch on our margins are less so that we could still, again, keep our pay high, but then also make it more affordable and more attainable for customers to have more conscious consumerism.
So where were you born? Were you born in America or in Mombasa?
I was born in San Antonio, Texas. My husband's from Alaska. We met in Kenya. It's been a journey. All my kids are born in Kenya. I'm a little jealous. They have amazing, beautiful accents. But yes, I was born in the States.
So what drew you to, or your family, to Kenya?
Originally, I came to Kenya to work within a school. Actually, I went on a mission trip in 2009. And I talk a lot about this trip because I think it was really eye-opening for me, because when I went, I actually said, I actually have no desire to go back to Kenya, more so because there was a lot of feelings that I was going through. And at that age, didn't know exactly how to put words to it. But when you walk into someone's home, right, in the middle of a village, and then at the end of the day, you're sitting in a hotel with a buffet in front of you, I think you go through a lot of mixed emotions of what is this world and why am I here and what am I serving and what am I doing? And at the end of the day, my biggest question and what it came down to is relationships. I built a lot of beautiful relationships with the women of the village. And when I came back the following year, I was actually there to build, again, to work within this school. And I was building out children's sponsorship profiles. And I would go and I would do the home visits. And I realized the children struggling the most are coming from these single widowed and disadvantaged women homes. And I said, you know, at the end of the day, these kids are going to continue to be sent home because these women can't afford the school fees. And although it's important that they pay for these school fees, what about the women? Because they've never been educated themselves. They're not going to know the value of education. We need to start with the women in their home to truly change the next generation where these kids and their future lays. And the organization at that time was like, well, that's not our responsibility, which I understand as well too. But I think that's where the stirring in my heart said, okay, maybe I am meant to be here. Maybe I am meant to stir up conversation. And Imani Collective is really, yeah, it's a soft spot in my heart because it was built together. I say we're not just better together, we are our best, because I didn't just come in and say, these are all the best ideas. I had no idea. You know, it was more like, what if we did this and what would this look like? And posing the question, and I gained 16 best friends and we built Imani from the ground up. And that's kind of how it started, and moved into the village. And they taught me how to wash my clothes and cook over an open fire. And I taught them how to sew, and it started really simple. And it's been a really amazing organic journey to where we are today.
So does Imani still have the mission religious component to it, or is it not anymore?
I would say faith is foundationally who we are, who I am. I mean, Imani means faith in Swahili, and it's been a faith journey to where we're going. But the reality of what we're trying to do is to break cycles and to truly empower in social, economic, and environmental spaces. So we have sustainability pillars we run by. We follow, you know, different UN SDGs, making sure that we're just aligned with all that we're doing. As we've grown, it's become more than, again, just a training sewing, became into a global social enterprise, and then focused on everything that we're doing. We understand that there's the input that we have, also there's output. And so to also pay attention to the circular economy of our product, the life cycle of that, how we're shipping, again, how we're engaging with our community as well as our consumer. One of my biggest, I guess, pillars from the beginning is that I will always buy and purchase local. So a lot of artisan brands also, like, components of what they make, they import in to country. And I decided to probably go the harder route, but I wanted to make sure we supported local businesses and communities. So from the very beginning, we've always bought local. Instead of importing, like, zips or things like that and components, we maybe partner with someone who does their own casting and, again, truly knowing our supply chain and understanding the relationships there. So that's one thing I'm really proud of us, you know, pushing forward in that. Another thing is in 2022, we went completely plastic free in our export. So we wrap everything in the beautiful Katange Conga fabrics. And then when it gets to our warehouse in Tennessee or within the UK, because we have a couple fulfillment sites, we then turn that fabric to be purchased by suppliers, or we repurpose it into another product. So always, you know, paying attention to how are we reusing, revitalizing other parts of our processes as well. So started with people, of course, truly started with the woman and wanting to empower the woman. And then now we have equality in our hiring. We have men on staff, and a lot of beautiful things have changed over the years, but just wanting to make sure that we're looking at all facets of how we run our business and continue to try to do it better.
You know, and artisans as a force for economic growth in many communities have, especially in where these crafts are so rich, have had a great impact on the communities, not just by selling this one basket, but it downstream into the purchase of raw materials, like you said, the local ones, the banking facilities, the education for their kids, the healthcare. It's that one basket, the impact of that is not just what you pay for that one basket, but further downstream, there are multiple levels of impact.
And I think a lot of people, I don't think we talk about that enough, about the power of our dollar, right? And where that's being spent. Because one, I guess, something that companies can get better at that we strive to do every quarter and every year is put out, like, impact reports and make sure we're sharing those numbers, right? Because I don't think people, whether or not people care about it or not, right? We're trying to change people's mindset and how they consuming things. But I think it's also really important to truly know that ripple effect and that domino effect. We, you know, that one artisan that we have in our workshop, you know, we now support over 130 artisans. That one artisan equates to 5 to 8 people, right? So that your impact is so much greater than, you know, what we're seeing at hand. And so, yeah, that basket, it has a big ripple, and it means a lot. And there's a reason to that price and in the way that it's put out there. So we really try to combat the fast fashion and what that looks like. And just also people understanding, again, not just the economic side of it, but also the sustainable side of the material usage as well, and the effects of what it has too.
And there's a major cultural value by making people proud of their heritage, you know, not just go out and buy imported brand name stuff, but to feel proud that they are keeping a part of their culture. There's this research which shows that the economic value for the community is multifold even in that. And you're doing that with training the women. So let's talk a little bit about training, which is a core part of Imani, you know, training and education. So how many women have been trained thus far?
Yeah, currently we've trained up to 150 women. We don't have, like, a current cycle where it's like we have a cycle for 2 years and then they join our cooperative. It's kind of been an organic growth over the years. And then we do a lot of on-site training. Also, as we've grown, you know, it's not just sewing. So it's been really interesting as we've grown into different trades, because when we first started, you know, our first group was really unique because we're working with a marginalized group that has no former education. And so we had to backtrack and be like, like, okay, we can't just teach sewing. We got to start with teaching numbers so they can read the measuring tape, so that they can understand even how to draw into a straight line. All these basic things that, you know, we kind of are naively walk into it and realize, okay, we really have to start from ground zero. As we've grown as Imani and as we've moved into new departments like weaving, whether it's blanket weaving or rug weaving or leather works or screen printing or macrame or sisal work, you know, the different facets of our workshop, a lot of what I love to do is bring on a master of that trade, because they've been doing it for many, many, many years, and sitting down and giving them, one, the value of their work, because most of the time, master of weaving or master of ceramics, whatever it might be, has been underpaid for so long because they've just been doing piecework. So let's first value you as a top-notch trainer who has 40 years of service, and then put you over a department and you run it and you build it. And so that's what we did with weaving when that came into our laps in 2016, is I found people who were already masters in the trade and partnered with them. And we built kind of the training curriculum together and then started bringing people on. And that was really cool to see them do that.
So they didn't feel any insecurity about sharing their wisdom, sharing their knowledge. Because, you know, many times the traditional people, the knowledge is passed on generation to generation by oral narration. There are no written books. So often that's the source of their livelihood. It has been for generations. So they may not be so open to sharing it with the whole community, right?
Yes, I would say there has been different pushback, but I would say ultimately consistency and relationships builds the trust and rapport. Like, I think over time, I mean, from the women who've been with me since the beginning, I've been with them for now 12 years, and to know, okay, I think knowing people ahead of time, right? So now it's a little bit easier because you can bring someone in and say, hey, like, talk to the people who've worked with us, like, get to know, like, get to kind of hear some testimonials. I think the hardest part was the beginning of paving the way that, like, we can build this, you know, this trust and rapport. Like, we're not going to just take it and rip it and move, because we do. We see that all the time. And that's just not in the artisan space. That's in any business, right? Where someone sees something good, rips it off, goes, makes it cheaper and faster and somewhere else. And so I would never, ever want, you know, them to feel that way or feel as if we're taking their livelihood. If anything, I want to empower them to say, hey, look, you're leaving a legacy behind for what you've been, you know, for what you've known and what you've built. But that takes a lot of time and relationships. I am blessed and honored that, like, I've been in one place and been in Mombasa to continue to build those relationships with our team.
Imani has several initiatives, right? For instance, the Sela.
Yeah, you have Imani Kids, and we have Sukwa Saddle Blankets, which is a initiative on the equestrian side. We make saddle, organic, natural saddle blankets for horses. We have Sela, which is a brand that's being launched actually in October. So that will be a higher end brand. So that margin will be much higher. It's going to be a more expensive brand that actually is from our workshop to your home. So it won't hit any of our fulfillment centers locally. Globally. We're going to be sending that straight from Kenya to you. And so to have this really beautiful experience of our workshop right into your hands. Then you also have Imani Soko, which is our local brand in Kenya and East Africa. So that has a variety of mix of who and what we are in the back end of our workshop. What I found as we rebranded, our biggest move that we did as a business was rebrand to the kids brand. There were pros and cons to that, because the pro was it got us out into a level playing field where we were able to compete and be able to work in the e-commerce space and also across all brick and mortar stores on a global scale and really get the name out for what we were going to do and what we were doing. The con to that is it put us in a box. So if you go to Imani Kids, they're like, oh yeah, you do canvas work. That's all you do is work with canvas, or you know, affirmation banners. And we're so much more than that. We have so many skills. And so it limited the accessibility or the visibility to the skills that our artisans have. And so Imani Soko is kind of reviving that, as well as Sela is. And that's something this year we're really focusing on, is for people to know that we're not just these initiatives and these brands, but we're also an ethical manufacturing site and option for anyone who is a designer or wants to do corporate gifting or wants to do custom work for conferences or whatever it might be. We're kind of that sustainable shop for you, you know, where you can come and you can interact and sample with us and really experience the impact you're having with your design as well.
You also offer branding services.
Yeah, we do.
So do you also help entrepreneurship programs for these artisans and offer branding services? Or what part of Imani is that?
Yeah, I would say it's a little bit kind of, it's all encompassing. So my background, my education background, my doctorate is in leadership education, and my research focused on the resource gaps of social entrepreneurs. What I realized is the top three resource gaps include social networks, right? Just getting to know people. And with the lack of social networks, you lack financial capital. And then with lack of financial capital, you lack human capital and you lack a team. So that's always been a heartbeat of mine as Imani has grown, for us to be able to provide that. So not only do I do coaching and mentorship and have resources for people who are within kind of social impact sector and moving in that area, I love helping people build strategy. But we also have a brand, Talanta, that provides services. We have a whole directory of talent all over Africa who are web developers and graphic designers and amazing skill base that can help you, yes, build brand, whatever that might be. And then it not only helps you be able to launch, you know, into where you want to be, but then you're also, again, providing impact and providing another job. So our vision overall, again, started as a sewing training program, but our overarching vision of Imani is to provide dignified work in all different spaces and creative outlets.
I also noticed that people could donate.
Yes.
To Imani. So how does that, some part of you a nonprofit?
We actually started as a nonprofit. We built under a nonprofit for 8 years, and then we moved into a hybrid model of both nonprofit and for-profit. So all of our brands and our products land under that for-profit space. So if you're purchasing, you're providing directly for that job. And then on the nonprofit side, we offer tons of holistic programs and outreach. So some of the programs that we offer around our artisans is like our free childcare program. We have a food program. We do financial literacy trainings. We do other skills trainings once a month that we bring in. Experts come in and they might talk to our women about female reproductive health or whatever it might be, so that we're making sure that people, again, are being educated in different areas and that they're just feel surrounded and supported. We also do a lot of outreach. So one of our locations in Northern Kenya, in Turkana, we do a lot of food outreach up there and partner with different larger organizations as well. And we do a lot of beach cleanups around Mombasa as well. So that's a space that people can donate so that we can continue to give back to our community as well as continue to grow on our business side too.
You do amazing work, and Imani has had a major impact in the communities that it serves. How much of religious freedom do the people who work with you have?
We are very unique where we are based in Mombasa, which is a melting pot of cultures and religions. So if you've ever been to Mombasa, it's the largest East African port. So we have tons of people, and the history of it, you know, is people have been in and out of that port and then married within locals, and that became the Swahili group and all of that. My husband and I live within Old Town and are in right by the fort and down there in the old city. We really, truly want spiritual sustainability within our organization. So we all come from different faith backgrounds. Yes, I am from a Christian faith background, but we have a gamut of people specifically within Islam that are within our collective as well. So when Ramadan happens, making sure that people can leave early to get prepared for that. Plus, I love breaking fast with my women, it's amazing food, making sure people have freedom to leave during prayers. We also offer like optional things as well, whether that's worship or Bible studies that people can be a part of, but everything is optional. We want to make sure that people feel supported and loved. And if anything, we want to encourage people to have some sort of foundation in faith, but we want to make sure that they really feel loved, seen, and heard, and like there's that inclusive nature within our collective.
And a unique part of your brand, I noticed that people could send thank you notes to the artisans. How often do customers go and send these thank you notes?
I wish they did it more. I encourage them. I would say we probably get a couple every week. There was one year where I really pushed it. So I was getting them all the time and I was like very excited about it. But yes, they can send thank you notes. It's very easy to do that on our website. And we actually get emailed and we print it out and we have a bulletin board. We also hand the thank you notes directly to our artisans. So it does get to them. We do make sure that it happens. Like I said, it doesn't happen as much as I would love it to, but it is always an option.
If you had to put a dollar amount on the impact Imani had on the communities that it serves, what would that be?
A dollar amount. That's a hard question. Millions. It's hard to put a dollar amount, though. I think the work that at the end of the day, the work is truly based in how are we being kind and compassionate and really caring about the people and the relationships. That's why we started, right? It's to see someone truly come into their own and be confident. I love when I see the transformation of a woman. You know, they're timid when they first join us to even 6 months down the road, their confidence in how they shine because they've just been surrounded by a group that believes in them and says, you are enough and you can be what you want to be. You know, I think words are so powerful. And when you surround yourself with the right people, you will start to change from the inside out. And so I think for me, those are like priceless moments. But the reality of impact from medical to food to salary implications, I mean, millions and millions over the last decade. And I'm really, really proud of our team and what we've done so far. And I always tell our team, it's just the beginning. There's so much more to do.
But that's really beautiful answer. We value relationships, people more than just dollar amounts. Thank you so much, Jenny, for coming on Mindful Businesses.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a joy, and I'm so glad we finally were able to make it happen.
Yes, me too. You're listening to Mindful Businesses, produced and hosted by Vidya Iyer. We would love to hear from you. Send us an email at info@mindfulbusinessespodcast.com. If you learned a thing or two from this episode, share it with one friend. Click on the subscribe button to be the first to learn about our latest episodes. We recorded this podcast in Buffalo, New York. Theme music was composed by Tatum Gale. Roseanne Kurian is our marketing assistant. Ethan Karat is our podcast editor. Our advisors are Jim Stone and Anupama Pastrija. This is Vidya Iyer with Mindful Businesses.